Sports Radio 1290. CFRW Winnipeg. All sports.
Yeah! Time to get a lift.
All the time. Sports Radio 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of in-depth analysis, insight, and opinion into Canada's game. Now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at sportsradio1290.com, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm the host of this fine program, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and Richard Pollock.
Michael Remus is operating the R desk over at www.illegalcurve.com, and producer Tim gets us on and off the air like the expert that he is. I think there's only
Jay and Westwood.
I think there's only two words that can sum up this morning.
Jay and Westwood?
Well, those are. I wasn't expecting those two words, but Timmy, we're not going to blame you for that one. I'm guessing that one was already programmed in there.
Okay, Timmy's nodding. We'll give Timmy a pass on that one. But the only two words that I think are appropriate are "we're back."
I think so.
Right?
Eh.
2.5
That's all you got after a few weeks off, and that's all you got?
Yeah.
little weak.
Drew.
Yeah, true.
There could have been you could have improved your intro, or maybe had, some factual information about hockey, the sport that the show is based around.
Remus? No, but
I think he needs to add a few verbal exclamation marks to "we're back."
And I'm gone. How about that? I'm gone.
We're back.
We're back. A little more emphasis on the back or something?
Yeah, that was just "we're back."
Okay, we're back.
See, Drew, you emphasized the "we're," and you should have emphasized the "back," especially the "a's" and "back." You emphasized the "we're back."
All right.
And you're here with Jerry?
Right. There was a Seinfeld episode about that. Anyways, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's been, about 3 weeks or so, boys?
Yeah.
I think that's our longest hiatus in the last couple of years. So We're obviously thrilled to be back on the airwaves here at Sports Radio 1290. 9 to noon this morning, a 3-hour program. But it's worth noting that this will be our final Saturday morning show. After this week, you can find us from noon until 3, kicking off your NHL game day coverage on Saturdays here on Sports Radio 1290. So join us every Saturday following this one, noon until 3 p.m. here on Sports Radio 1290 with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big show upcoming for you this morning. In about 1 hour's time, we're going to be joined by Jamie McLennan. You know him from TSN, a long NHL career. He's going to be joining us at about 10 o'clock or so. And then coming up at 11:30, the voice of the Winnipeg Jets here on Sports Radio 1290, Brian Munns, is going to be joining us, chat a little bit about the Jets. And, of course, we're going to be covering the Jets, all their news in its entirety today and then throughout the rest of the NHL season. But we're not going to take away from our usual coverage of everything else in the hockey world. So, 9 to noon today, noon to 3 going forward here on Sports Radio 1290. Gentlemen, good morning. Welcome to the program.
Were we already welcomed?
No, I didn't welcome you yet. I'm formally welcoming you now.
Drew, great to be back. Excited about the upcoming season. Today is September 10th, which means we are less than a month away from opening night. Yep. Pretty crazy. Training camp opens a week today, so there's a lot to be excited about.
Rookie camp starts tomorrow, so we're actually...
It starts today, this afternoon.
Oh, sorry. Yesterday.
No.
Today. We'll be there tomorrow at the Iceplex.
Are we going down there today, this afternoon, Reem? Are you going down there?
I have to put the show up, and I have a ticket draft after this. I mean, if you want me to go, I'll go.
Well, maybe we'll send Dave Manuka of LegalCurve.com down there.
Just so everyone knows, Reem has been doing an unbelievable job, especially with the jersey unveiling on Tuesday.
Pretty good.
You know what, Reem? I think you deserve the day off. We'll go to the Jets practice at the Iceplex on Sunday. Enjoy your ticket draft. Have a sandwich. Relax.
Illegal Curve.
Drew's been working you hard. Drew's been, working you extremely hard, so we'll give you the day off.
Drew's not a great boss.
I didn't realize I was his boss. If I knew that, now I could have a lot more fun with this.
Drew, where is Hugo Boss? But he's not a good boss.
Remus?
We should get some of Drew's, people have worked under Drew before and ask them if he's a good boss.
That would be a good interview. McLennan, we'll push it on another day. Let's get on some Drew's employees.
No, I think we won't be doing that, but that's a good idea anyways. Anyways, yes, rookie camp gets underway at the Iceplex with, there's physicals and all the off-ice stuff that they do, and then there's an on-ice session, I believe, that begins at 2 o'clock this afternoon down at the Iceplex, if I'm not mistaken.
Let's get in for a second. I wonder if these rookie camps, obviously, they get far more coverage this past year or so. The coverage increases every year with Twitter and everything else that comes along with that. And I wonder if there's almost too much attention given to these games for players that maybe had a bit, were better off kind of developing, behind the scenes. And we'll see. I mean, we're going to probably analyze in depth Mark Scheifele's rookie camp, and in reality, what does it really mean and how much of an effect does it have moving forward? I don't know, but I think people need to take what they see with a grain of salt and realize that this is their first time on the ice, reality competing. You know, Scheifele played in the junior camp, but this is a different ballgame. He's playing with guys who played, in NHL before. And that's something people have to deal with and realize that there's a pretty big discrepancy in guys that have played in NHL before and guys who are just coming out of junior and were signed as free agents. So, there might be some meaning in what you see, but also there might not be. So don't overanalyze.
Well, Richie, I think there's a couple things. I think obviously we're in Canada and specifically in Winnipeg, and this is the first time we're actually seeing our players in an organized format, before training camp. Obviously, training camp will be, more of the players that are actually going to play. Uh-huh. But I think in Canada, people are just, people love to see this stuff.
Absolutely.
But I think the other thing is Kevin Cheveldayoff himself said that, basically just echoed what you just said. He said that a lot of these guys aren't going to be playing in the NHL next year. Most of them actually won't be playing in the AHL next year. So you shouldn't read too much into the outcomes of the games. I think we're going to get into a little bit later, if I'm not mistaken, Drew, about rookie camp. But realistically, out of the 22 guys, there's only maybe five guys, six maybe at most, that have a decent shot at making the team. You could even almost shorten that, Richie, to maybe even two.
Yes.
So
Scheifele's not making the team, just to let you guys know.
I don't
know why you're so insistent. Nobody thought Jeff Skinner was going to make the Carolina Hurricanes last year.
Different ballgame.
Why is it a different ballgame?
Skinner's a better player.
And did you think he was going to make the... You never know. First of all,
I think he was going to make the team. I picked him for my surprise rookie, Drew.
Drew, the analogy isn't bad, okay?
Because they're seventh picks. You never know what's going to happen.
Hold on, though. It's not just because they're seventh picks. There are parallels there. If you look at Skinner's numbers in his last year, he played for Kitchener in the OHL. And Scheifele plays for Barrie, or played for Barrie, but we're expecting him to go back. They're not Skinner's numbers, it's not like he had 150 points. I think he had something like 60 or 70 points. But the parallels, I think, are as far as opportunities go. I think when you look at the Jets, you're looking at Burmistrov being your second-line center, and now that Kyle Wellwood has been signed, he's either going to be the third or fourth-line center, with Ben Maxwell. There is opportunity on the Jets for him to step in, but I do agree with Richie, though, that was a unique situation. And I think the thing for me, the difference between Scheifele and Skinner, you can't just look at a guy's numbers in junior and say, oh, okay, well, 75 points, that's pretty good. Skinner only had 68 or whatever. The thing is, Skinner really improved in his last year playing on a team that was a little bit better. Look, the Barrie Colts were a bad team last year, and Scheifele got a lot of ice time. I'm not taking anything away from Scheifele. I think he's going to be a very good... I probably would pencil him in as a second-line kind of defensive forward. But I just don't think he's making the team.
I don't think he's making the team either. Don't get me wrong. I don't think he's going to make the team. But I wouldn't be stunned or blown away or say it's a guarantee that if he has a great rookie camp and a great training camp that they send him back to the juniors.
When's a March birthday? When's a May birthday? Jeff Skinner's final year in junior, he had 50 goals in 64 games in the OHL, 90 points in 64 games, and 20 goals in 20 playoff games. They're not the same player. Jeff Skinner is a superior player.
I don't think that they're the same player. I'm not saying they're the same player. I'm just saying I don't think it's 100% cut and dry that he's for sure going back to Barrie.
What about from this perspective? Do you want to burn an entry-level year right now?
Probably not, because this team isn't going anywhere this year.
No.
This
team is primed right now. We're going to talk about it later in the show. All the things that's going on right now, this team is primed to be even worse than I thought. And we didn't think they were going to be good in the first place. If you don't sign Bogosian, which I think they will, if you don't have Bogosian sign, Bufflin's out of shape.
Fair.
Your strength right there becomes a weakness almost.
Fair injury is huge.
Fair.
Well, but they knew Fair was going to be out for the first few months when they traded for him.
A month or two.
But still, you have to.
On that conference call when they acquired him, it was a Friday afternoon. He said, "Look, I'm not ready. I'm not going to be ready." He said that 6 weeks ago.
They lost free agents and then didn't replace them with quality NHLers.
They didn't lose any significant free agents.
Radek Dvorak, Robbie Schrempf, those are offensive guys, Drew.
I wouldn't call them significant free agents.
Well, they're still guys that you could use.
Yeah, there's always guys you could use. You can go out and sign guys that you can use, but they decided to keep their money instead.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's my point. They didn't replace them with guys that could score.
But people have to stop with, well, we'll talk about Bogosian later, but people have to stop with the waiting for Doughty to sign. It's not comparable.
I'm not waiting for Doughty to sign. I'm in Winnipeg, and I'm waiting for Bogosian to sign, but obviously...
Well, the question is, though,
somebody's waiting for somebody to sign.
Is Bogosian waiting for Doughty to sign?
No. Well, why? They're not comparable. If your agent's waiting for him to sign, then, I mean, and he's dreaming. Bob Murray's dreaming.
Just because Bogosian isn't, pardon me, Doughty isn't just such another world compared to, you know, Bogosian or, I mean, or Shen.
You had a
that's
free
the
agent,
comparison.
If you put every player on the wire right now, free agent wire, he would
you mean
probably,
to do an all NHL fantasy draft?
Fantasy draft, but with, you know, with the salary cap and all that stuff.
Okay.
You put every player on the wire with Sidney Crosby's concussion issue right now.
Yeah.
You can make a very, very good argument that Drew Doughty would go for the highest amount of money.
Over Crosby.
Because of concussion.
Over
problems.
Ovechkin?
Oh, you mean factoring in.
You could argue that.
So you're talking about, because, so, I mean, you're talking
he's
about.
20.
Bogosian might be the top, would be the top defenseman. Oh, maybe one or, no, probably not even the top defenseman on this team with Enstrom. And then you,
Or Byfuglien, you could argue.
Or Byfuglien. And then you have Doughty, and then you're saying Doughty is probably the, a top three player in the NHL, potentially?
Potentially, absolutely.
In the next couple of years, you would, I mean, it wouldn't be unheard of.
He was the best defenseman in the Olympics, guys. That's the best players in the world. He was the best defenseman. He didn't have the great season last year. Two seasons ago, he was unbelievable. But this guy has offensive skills of the most skilled offensive players and is terrific. I mean, he's just, you know, you're talking like Doughty, Stamkos, all those guys are in the same class. So don't put Bogosian in there. I mean, they're not comparable.
I don't have as good of a read on Luke Shen, guys. But as far as I'm concerned, what's happening with the Stahl contracts is that Doughty wants less years, and he doesn't want to eat up those UFA years, and I think Bogosian's asking for too much on an annual basis. And I really think that there is a large enough chasm between those, and that's why they're not signed. As far as I'm concerned, it's a little bit weird because I don't think we've ever had, if I'm mistaken, post-lockout, three RFA defensemen, or even two RFA defensemen that aren't signed before training camp. It's ridiculous. Yeah. And
especially maybe RFA defensemen who have absolutely no leverage.
Because yeah,
the truth is, the player, aside from holding out,
aside from,
they have no leverage.
Well, let's talk about this way. Bogosian has the least amount of leverage. The Leafs need to make the playoffs to save face for Brian Burke.
Shen,
of course,
you mean.
They'll probably make the playoffs.
No. Bogosian has the least amount of leverage because the Leafs need Shen to make the playoffs.
Right. He helps make the playoffs, and the Kings go from Stanley Cup contender to good, really good team, but not a great team if they don't have Doughty on the roster.
I would go as far as to say they might not make the playoffs without Doughty.
No, they'll make the playoffs. That their forwards are great, their goaltending is good, but
you take Doughty off that D.
Of course,
not a very good D.
That's right.
Well, I think they're still a playoff team, but you're right. You're taking away their what are legitimate Stanley Cup aspirations if he's not on the back end there for the Kings. And apparently, and I mean, of course, we're going to talk about this in more detail in the next couple segments. Apparently, he's turned down. They offered him the Anze Kopitar contract, and he turned it down.
It was 9 years.
He doesn't want that. He doesn't want 9 years.
So why would he want to buy out his UFA years?
If you're getting paid $7 million a year, why don't you want 9 years?
Well, because, first of all, maybe some players
limits
don't
your mobility.
Don't feel comfortable with 9 years, which I'm surprised so many players do feel comfortable with it. Second of all, you look at what he can get right now. In reality, he probably could get close to 5 or 6, even on his RFA stuff. He can just sit out and wait. He can get paid 2 to 3 years. He can go year by year if he wants, have all the leverage in the world. And if he hits free agency, dear God, it'll be a bidding war.
Richie, is Doughty not looking for probably 3 or 4 years?
Yeah, exactly. 3, 4,
so
5.
So 3 to 4 years versus 9?
Listen, if they're going to pay me $7 million a year, I don't mind taking a 9-year contract and be set for the next 9 years of my life and know exactly where I need to be and what
I need to do.
People
don't like that, Drew. Some players want the freedom to be able to decide where they're going to be in a couple of years. They don't want to be locked into Los Angeles for that long. What if he wants to go back to Ontario and play for the Leafs? Just in theory, and they're good in 4 years, and he wants to play closer to home. He wants the ability to decide if he wants to do that.
Yeah.
So many players take the guaranteed money up front. That's fine. But look at Mike Richards. You take that money. You don't have any control over where you're going. You're lucky to go to L.A., but you could have gone to Timbuktu.
Or you could have gone to Columbus like Jeff Carter.
There you go. Great. That's exactly a better example.
Would have been nice.
As opposed to the Timbuktu Icemen that are in the Continental Hockey League. Is that right?
But isn't that... That's my point. So...
Yeah. It's a fair point. And, it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out in the next week. Like you said, training camp starts 1 week from today. So it'll be interesting to see how these things develop in the next week to 10 days.
Before we go to break, Bogosian needs to be in camp. It's his third coach in 3 years. It's a different system. It's different mentality. Everything's going to be changing. You don't want to delay. Sure he's in shape and sure he's, but it's different shape and he has to mesh with his teammates. Is he going to play significantly with Oduya? Are they going to switch it up? Is he going to play with Enstrom? Is he going to play with Hainsey? What's going to happen? How do they want to do it? Is he going to see power play time? Is he going to see increased penalty kill time? All those things need to be taken into account. You don't want to you know, push that into a one-week period because you can't agree on numbers. And I don't know who's right or wrong. I don't know the figures. But right now, the Jets have more leverage than... Well, I don't know. They both don't have much leverage, to be honest. I'll put it that way.
And one last thing, Drew. Let me step
real quick.
To Richie's point.
Real quick.
As far as these guys not having leverage, these guys, you know, cannot be signed to offer sheets. Is that not correct?
That's right. They're not... They can be signed to offer sheets, but nobody's going to do it.
Especially now.
Okay, so they can be signed, but
they're
not...
Yeah, they can be signed, but nobody's going to...
That's the one thing that was mentioned...
That's their only leverage.
That could be leverage, but it's not...
It's not going to happen.
So,
it hasn't happened in years. It's not going to happen. It would match pretty much anything.
There hasn't been a holdout since Kovalchuk, by the way, in the NHL. Kovalchuk was the last holdout.
In Atlanta.
There's an offer sheet last year, Drew Chalmerson.
Right. That's right. I apologize.
With Shovel Dayoff was involved in that.
And he had a horrible season, bit of an overpay.
Yeah, he did a bad year.
Yeah. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to touch on the latest tragedy that strike the hockey world, the plane crash in the KHL. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show shortly past 9:15 in the morning here on Saturday.
It's been said ad nauseum at this point in time, the tragic summer that the hockey world faced, and it reached let's call it an epidemic proportion this past week with the tragedy that came out of Russia, the KHL plane crash of Lokomotiv, where the majority of the team perished. Their memorial service was held in Russia earlier today. Tens of thousands of people showed up.
It was actually 100,000. The CBC website said 100.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, a huge crowd came to pay their respects. Prime Minister, or President Putin, whatever he is now, I'm not sure. I can't remember. It's obviously not something that you want to talk about, and it's not easy to talk about, of course. But, with this plane crash and with the problems in the Russian aviation system, if you're a player, a fringe NHLer now who can go to, who's been offered a big contract in Russia, and they pay good money there for certain players, how seriously do you have to consider the travel factor as in your determination?
Pretty significantly, Drew. When I heard about the news, obviously tragic news, all I could think about was the book I read, and I meant to bring it in this morning, and I forgot. King of Russia, a book written by Eric DeHatch in collaboration with Dave King. Dave King, I believe a Winnipegger, actually.
Yeah.
Spent some time over in the KHL, and it chronicles a season, in Russia, and the cultural aspects of it, and coaching, and the communication differences, and how, to try and get their message across. But what I thought about most when I saw that story was the portion of the book that referred to the aviation and his fears. And these guys fly a lot. Some of them obviously have fears, but some of them are pretty okay about it. Dave King's flown a lot over his career, whether it be internationally playing or coaching the NHL or wherever else. And he talked about his fear of the planes themselves. And you don't usually maybe you don't have that inside information, but he talked about how they used to call, I think one was a pterodactyl, they called it.
Yeah,
Coach Igor Korolev, the late Igor Korolev, the former Winnipeg Jet. And he talked about how some of the times he was worried about the plane taking off and the system. And when I read the book, that was one of the most concerning things to me was it's a league that spends millions of dollars on certain players but doesn't put enough money into the safety and of the travel. And that always caught my eye reading the book. I was shocked by that. There's a bunch of other things in the book. I recommend reading it because of just the differences there. But on this point, and he mentioned it this week in radio interviews, that sometimes he was on the plane and wasn't sure the plane was going to get off the ground. That is worrisome. And some people were saying, at this point in the tragedy, we shouldn't be looking at that because nothing's been decided. We know one thing. We know that the plane that was being flown by the owners of the team or whoever it may be.
The plane that had been chartered.
Was not approved to fly in the European Union.
Airspace.
European airspace. So then why was it approved to fly there?
Well, we know that the problems with the Russian aviation system, those have been well documented. But you're absolutely right. If you have an owner and you're spending millions of dollars on these players, what's the point of spending the millions of dollars if you can't travel safely between point A and point B?
Exactly. And I always wonder who's making these decisions. There has to, you don't want to lay blame on anybody in this situation because it's so tragic. But at the same time, you need to take into account there needs to be some kind of responsibility for people putting these people on planes.
Richie, and that's why the onus comes down to the KHL and to work with, basically the federal whether it's the Aviation Commission or the Federal Aviation System, because you're right, Drew. I mean, as far as travel goes, I mean, I'm pretty sure that each NHL team has several people that their full-time job is to basically handle travel.
Well, it's a lot of work.
Yeah. These guys are not only traveling by plane, Drew. There's car. They're traveling by bus to practices. When you factor in team outings, this and that, you want to make sure that you know everything is top notch.
I found it interesting. I mean, it has nothing. It doesn't specifically relate to the aviation. But when the Manitoba Moose used to have team functions, Mark Chipman said to the guys, you're not allowed to drive. Right. Team functions where alcohol is served. Right. He said you're not allowed to drive. He said.
And that's the way it should be.
Here are your cab chits to get you home safely. Good. He said, "I don't. You know what? For the couple hundred dollars it's going to cost me in cab chits, I'd rather pay that than the unthinkable happen on the other side of the equation."
There's one goaltender. I forget who it was. Oh no, it was Jan Denis.
There was an article in the Globe and Mail with Jan Denis. Yeah,
saying that he was on a plane that taped the wing.
Yep. I was telling, I was.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm not getting on that plane. It's that simple.
Unfortunately,
but I mean, as a player, you don't think about these things. Nobody thinks about these.
Maybe
things.
Maybe you do, and you're worried about it, but you want to make a living, and then there's certain things you have to weigh in, and we can't put ourselves in the people in the KHL shoes right now who are playing there because they're probably weighing those things, and we might make a different decision than they would. Regardless,
do you think that this will? Do you think that the KHL, which is a rogue league, it's unsanctioned. Do you think that they will institute some sort of aviation policy as a result of this?
Well, apparently, they are taking strides right now. I don't think they have an option. But the word is on flying in Russia is flying in and out of Russia, with other people's carriers is safe. It's when you fly within Russia.
Oh, when you're flying, exactly. When you're flying Ruski Air, which only flies from Minsk to wherever, of course, but Air Canada or whoever, United or any of the major, quote-unquote, North American airlines, aren't flying these unsafe aircraft.
You hope nobody fly. And, in terms of the people that are lost, there's so many, and it's like any plane crash. A person's life is a person's life. And it's a tragedy, and when you see a mass tragedy at this point of 43 people, I believe, have passed away, it's awful. It's awful like any plane crash. These people have lives just like everybody else. Families, children, obviously.
Yeah.
Parents, and, what do you say? What do you say about people, close to home here, like a Brad McCrimmon, a guy who has paid his, played in the NHL for many years as a solid stay-at-home defenseman, paid his dues in Detroit, and only went and paid his dues coaching other teams, was Mike Babcock's sidekick with Paul McClain.
Mm-hmm.
McClain went to Ottawa, I believe McCrimmon coached last year in Detroit, and then decided to go to the KHL to be able to get a head coaching job, as Ken Hitchcock mentioned, in the NHL. So he went there to be able to get a head coaching job.
It was a means to an end for him.
Because he couldn't get one here. Yep. And he was excited about it, according to Dave King, who he spoke to about his experience beforehand. And he goes over there, and there's this tragedy. I mean, you're at a loss for words.
Well, here's the quote that we got from the Red Wings organization. We had reached out to them to see if Mike Babcock would have been able to come on the air. He wasn't available today, but this is the quote that they sent us. "The loss of Brad McCrimmon, Ruslan Salé, and Stefan Liv," who they were, Ruslan,
yeah, Swedish,
Swedish prospect for him, "has hit us all hard here in Detroit. Brad McCrimmon was a favorite of everyone around the organization and will be sorely missed."
Alan Mackey of the Globe and Mail has done a terrific job kind of encapsulating what Brad McCrimmon was all about. And Eric DeHatch also wrote a story about
it. George Johnson and the Calgary Herald wrote a great piece on Brad McCrimmon also.
I haven't read that one yet, but DeHatch references George Johnson in his piece talking about their relationship and he certainly touched a lot of people, and there's only been great things said about him. It's obviously a shame that all of the people involved in the plane crash are gone too early.
Would you say the McCrimmon family is the hockey family of Western Manitoba?
Yeah, it's the Stutters of Saskatchewan, Manitoba.
Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah, I would.
Kelly McCrimmon, GM and coach. Well, actually, no, he's not going to be the coach this year. Clouston's the coach, but he's still the GM. But Drew, just on the topic of the incident itself, the accident, there's nothing else that I can say, but it has been a tragic summer with the deaths of Rippon, Bugard, and Bielak. The way I look at it, this is something that isn't just to do with hockey.
That's right.
All I can say is that it's very sad, and I give my condolences to every player and, their family. I mean, it's tragic. And, this is obviously something that you know hurts more because it touches way more people.
Sure,
you can't really weigh them against each other, but
no.
it's just sad, and it's something that you never want to see. This is like your worst nightmare.
It is the worst nightmare of any professional hockey team. Let me ask you guys this question. Sidney Crosby held his press conference shortly after the locomotive tragedy was unfolding. Two-part question. One, do you think that he should have kept his press conference at that time? And two, what do you think it says, the fact that Crosby did not say one single word about the locomotive tragedy?
I don't think that was something. It might not be something he had that much information about, and he probably wasn't the one who decided whether he's going to go forward about it or not. I don't think it took away from it, really.
Isn't it incumbent upon him as the face of hockey, really, in the world right now? Isn't it incumbent upon him to say something on behalf of all players?
Maybe, Drew, but yeah, that's true. That's fair enough.
I mean, I just think, you know, and it's been made by other people, so I'm certainly not the only one who's saying this comment, but for Sidney Crosby to...
He should make a comment, you know, tragedy.
You know, I don't mind him having his press conference at the same time, or not at the same time, but, you know, his press conference was at noon or whatever, and, you know, this had happened 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock in the morning. Obviously, the timing sucks. But I don't mind him continuing on with his press conference, but to not start his... Ray Shiro mentioned something at the beginning of the press conference, but for Crosby himself, you know, player solidarity and everything else, for Crosby himself not to address it for a couple minutes, I think is a tremendous PR oversight on a guy who's been so far pretty in tune with media discussion and commentary about him.
I didn't see the press conference. Do we know, though, that Crosby hasn't said anything
Say a word in the press conference whatsoever.
No, I'm not talking
He hasn't
about
said a word about it.
He didn't want to have the press conference, Drew.
Outside,
that was imposed
outside
upon
of
him.
The press conference, as he said.
He has not said a word
that
about it.
That was for sure?
Yes, he has not said a word about it.
It was league mandate that he do the press conference.
Of course
not
he didn't.
Defending
of course
him,
the league. Of course the league told him to do the press conference. 100% agree with that. But even so, he had to agree to it, and he agreed to it. At that point in time, the hockey world has been hit hard by this tragedy, and the face of hockey in the world has to address the issue.
Yeah, you're right.
He doesn't have to, you know, wail away at the during the press conference, but he needs to address it and talk about the loss that the entire hockey world has felt. And for him not to have done that, I think, is a terrible oversight on his part. Let's go to commercial break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Wade Belak tragedy and a fascinating article in the Globe and Mail about pill popping in the NHL. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show shortly after 9:30 in the morning. This will take me a couple minutes, but I'm going to read this on air. It was just handed in to us, and it's certainly, really, I'm at a loss for words to describe it. Impactful, let's say. September 7th, which was the day of the locomotive plane crash. My day was supposed to be over a little after noon today, but as I dropped off my last client, the office asked me if I could do one more run at 2 o'clock. The story is being told by a limousine driver in the Dallas area. Being the team player that I am, I said I would. I had 90 minutes to drive back to our company lot, switch into a van, and then go to the pickup. Plenty of time to stop for some lunch and mess around on my phone. Piece of cake. After making the vehicle change, sucking down a burger and fries from BK, and washing it down with a Coke Zero, I proceeded to my pickup location, a full 40 minutes ahead of schedule. I am a happy chauffeur for the moment. I locate the residence that I need to be at, but being that the pickup is at 2 and it is only 1:20, I park a couple blocks away, per usual, and pick up my Thunderbolt to check Facebook and do some surfing. Thunderbolt must be a cell phone.
Yeah, smartphone.
First check of Facebook is littered with numerous comments and links about the tragic plane crash in Russia. 40-plus people dead. NHL players, past and present, coaches, prospects, and flight crew. Very sad news. I had been reading and hearing about it off and on all day. The ramifications reaching virtually all parts of the hockey world, and in less than 5 minutes, me. After my Facebook pit stop, I open up the trip ticket info on my phone to see who I am picking up. Another Dallas Stars transfer to the airport. That explains the van, why she needed the van. These hockey guys always have big bags because they are usually traveling overseas. The last name, one I don't recognize. I'll have to Google him. The rush that comes over my body is unexplainable. I'm just staring at my phone. He was on that plane, and he is dead. I am sitting 200 yards from his house, and I realize what this pickup is all about. I am about to pick up the family of this man.
A family that went to bed last night without a care in the world. A family that had no plans to board a Lufthansa flight to Europe when they woke up this morning. This explains why it was added to my schedule at 12:15 today. Is this for real? It's finally time to go down the street and pull in the driveway. Within a couple of minutes, a man comes out to let me know that the family will be out in a few moments. He alerts me to the situation and tells me not to offer condolences because the children don't know. And then he returns to the house. I can't even imagine what his widow must be going through. My heart weeps for her. I am so glad that this will be a short ride. Then it happens. Two girls, about 2 and 5, come running out the door, completely elated about the trip they are about to go on. Long blonde hair, blue eyes, and giant smiles. I nearly burst into tears. My body gets tight. Every second feels like an eternity. The pain inside me is almost unbearable. I don't even know these people, and I am on the verge of a breakdown, right in their driveway. Knowing that these girls are utterly oblivious to the true nature of their trip is agonizing. I can't help but think of my own children and what it would be like if they woke up tomorrow and I was gone forever. Devastating. The wife and mother-in-law finally come out, and we are on our way. The entire drive, the widow is on the phone. She, as well as the rest of the family, are not speaking English. Although this would seem trivial, it is not. I don't understand a single word she is saying, but the pure pain in her voice tells the whole story. The mother-in-law is keeping the kids entertained in the back of the van while she sits up front and seems to be getting everything in order over the phone. I sense sorrow, trepidation, confusion, and despair. Just a few of what I imagine have been the many emotions that she has experienced since she woke up today. Again, my heart weeps for her. We finally arrive at Dallas-Fort Worth Airport, and a liaison from Lufthansa is waiting curbside for us with a security escort. He quietly offers his condolences to the widow while the girls are still getting out of the van. Personnel grab all their bags and they are off. Girls still giddy about the trip. I, however, am a mess. I barely get 100 feet away from the terminal when I lose it, crying uncontrollably. I feel stupid, but I don't care. I can't get the image of those girls out of my head. The idea that they have no clue that they will never see their father again. What's worse is that they probably haven't seen him in a couple of weeks and expect to see him when they get where they're going. Utterly heartbreaking. What a way to end the day. So, as I sit here recapping this gut-wrenching afternoon that I have experienced, I would like to end it with a final thought. It makes no difference to a child what happens to you when you die. They are going to be devastated either way. Just make sure they know what they mean to you. Remind them every day. Hug them every day. Kiss them every day. Most importantly, love them every day. Unconditionally. Because you never know what tomorrow will bring. Let's maybe go to a quick commercial break, Timmy. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 20 minutes before 10 o'clock in what has been undoubtedly a sort of a sadder hour than we're normally used to talking about here on the program. One more thing we got to get through in this summer of tragedy in the hockey world, and of course that was the loss of Wade Bielak, which came as an absolute stunner.
Yeah.
Of course. I mean, you know, Rick Rippon had his issues or had problems, and they were sort of
more documented.
They were more documented. Yeah. They were sort of more in the public eye.
Yeah.
The Wade Bielak thing came out of nowhere, and I mean, we're not in the position to speculate on what was going on in his head, because frankly, nobody ever knows what's going on in anybody else's head, and it would be inappropriate for us to do so.
I don't think I want to know what's going on in your head.
But what I think is interesting, and I think what we have to talk about, is
Michael Landsberg had interesting. I don't know if you saw that.
Michael Landsberg, who has been very public with his battle regarding depression, said that, you know, him and Bielak had spoken about it, and Bielak had admitted that he had been depressed for a number of a long while.
Yeah.
So I mean,
they talked about it over years, and then
yeah,
Landsberg kind of talked about him speaking to him a week or two before that. Yeah.
Exactly. So I mean, it was not, obviously some people knew, so, but it was not in the public domain, as there's no reason for it to be if somebody doesn't want it to be in the public domain. Before we move away from the BLAC thing real quick, what I find to be very odd is there's a couple of people in the hockey world, people who are relatively well-known in the hockey world. PJ Stock is one of them. And PJ Stock has publicly said and publicly written that he doesn't believe that Wade Bielak's death was a suicide.
Right.
And, you know, I don't want to say if, obviously, you know, you can only go on the word of the professionals who are who you know evaluate these sort of things. But for somebody to come out and say that is, I think, quite a bold statement. And I don't know what PJ Stock is really intimating at when he says it wasn't a suicide. And I find it very bizarre. And I don't really expect you guys to have any answer for me on that, but I just think it's worth putting out there on the public record that well-known hockey personalities are saying that they don't believe it was a suicide. And we're going to leave it at that because there's no point in speculating any further. But I find it to be odd. What I really want to talk about is the article that was in last Saturday's Globe and Mail. Sean Gordon, a frequent guest on this program, Alan Mackey, both of whom teamed up for an article, which I think is almost a call to arms for change that needs to take place in the hockey world.
It was the best article, in my opinion, that was written about what has happened in the last month or two, in my opinion.
Both terrific writers, both got a story and, you know,
developed.
Let me just quickly add, in the internet age of quick story, you know, and I see a lot of time on Twitter, oh, this is a really good story, you have to check it out. It really isn't that good. It's not that well written.
It's a short piece that wasn't edited properly.
Yeah, it wasn't. It's not that good. And this is a back in the day kind of piece.
This is sort of old fashioned journalism
and getting to the bottom of the story, actually putting time into it as opposed to just reporting wire stories or one quote from an agent. This is actually a real story.
Well, Richie,
the story is about the use of painkillers in the NHL.
Yeah.
And the story is available. We'll link the story. It's available at illegalcurve.com. Remus will put it up on the website right now. It's already on our Twitter, so at illegalcurve you can find it, and go to illegalcurve.com and you can find it there as well. It's a story that says the unspoken word in the NHL is the number of players who are addicted to painkillers.
Right.
And they're addicted to painkillers simply because they need them to get through the day-to-day grind of being an NHL player.
And this is not specifically guys that have injuries that are addicted to painkillers to get over their injuries. These are guys that are addicted to painkillers every day.
That's right. These are the guys who need painkillers really to function on a day-to-day basis.
It's not different than any other addiction.
Oh, absolutely. It's not a guy who's broken his arm and has pain as a result of it. It's a guy who plays 82 games a year, gets bumped, you know, a countless number of times and takes countless number of big body checks and fights if he chooses to fight.
Similar to the amphetamine problem in baseball.
Very similar.
See how the numbers drop since the hockey numbers would probably drop if you ban these certain substances.
Absolutely.
Because these guys aren't playing at a human level. I mean, you take away steroids and amphetamines out of baseball, nobody hits 40 homers anymore. Nobody hits 30 homers anymore.
Well, it's similar
in hockey. You would see. I mean, some of the players would not be able to perform at the level they are. Their body's numb.
You know, we love hockey. And this article, when I was reading this article, it reminds me of professional wrestling. It's what you read about when you hear about professional wrestling. All these guys who are professional wrestling, for all of its scriptedness and everything. These guys, they're still falling and getting hit and everything else.
Sure.
And they have. It's well documented, of course, that they have painkillers that they get them through their days.
Drew, you could take it even further and say that this is a problem in all of professional sports.
I'm sure it's not a problem in baseball or basketball. I'm sure it's as bad in football. It's probably worse in football. But I don't think it's a problem in basketball and baseball to the near to this extent.
No,
they're not as physical,
I'm just saying it might not be to the extent, but it's not. It's definitely not non-existent in any of these four sports.
The basketball guys are some of them are just superhuman athletes.
Well, it's a hockey and football problem.
The best players in basketball are so physically imposing that they impose that physical beating on the other players.
The human painkillers.
Because they're 7 feet tall and 300 pounds.
That's right.
Drew, I'll let you get back to the article, but there's something that I want to say about this issue with the three deaths to Bielak, Rippon, and Bugard. Bugard obviously was an overdose, and then, you know, everything...
On painkillers. I mean, oxycodone.
Right.
I mean, he's not taking oxycodone to, you know, for the high, I don't think. He's taking it because he's in pain.
Well, we don't know.
We don't know that, but when you first get your hands on it, it's probably because you got some sort of pain.
Well, Brett Favre had the same issue.
Yeah, he was addicted to Percocet. I mean, this is the quote in the article. Let me find it here.
you know, I just, sorry, I guess it's
people like to, people like to joke about Brett Favre, but Brett Favre came out with the problem, dealt with it. I mean, that's something that I think that he should be applauded for.
Richie, if you're addicted to painkillers, there's nothing worse. I mean, you can't. Obviously, some drugs are addictive, more addictive. Pardon me, than other drugs. But if you're addicted to painkillers, that can have just as bad effects
as
drinking alcohol, an alcoholic problem. Exactly. I mean, so as far as I'm concerned, if you're on painkillers to deal with an injury, then you shouldn't be drinking.
Here's Dennis Gauthier. He played in the NHL for 12 years. I mean, he was never
Denis Gauthier was a. I'll explain quickly. Denis Gauthier. He was a terrific skater.
Yeah.
He had limited puck skills. He was pretty nuts. He would
defenseman.
Physical. He would hit everybody. He was dirty. He'd use his knees, but he played amped up. He played like Brian Marchman.
It's working for RDS now.
They shoot left-handed. Like, they're very him and Marchman were very similar players.
I used to go see the guys who had just had surgery and ask them if they had any extra painkillers that he could have. This is Gauthier being quoted. Percocets, he insisted, are golden in the hockey world.
Or illegal.
Well, I mean, they're legally,
they have to be prescribed.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah. The truth of the matter is,
you get really high on them.
Yeah, you get and it numbs. You don't feel. It numbs your pain. And guess what? When you stop taking them, you start feeling pain again. So you keep taking them.
But let me ask you. It's similar, you know, to now that people who don't really know what Percocet is don't do it. You know, if you're drinking and you get drunk and you've had a lot to drink and you're doing things and you know you walk outside in Winnipeg and it's freezing.
Yeah.
It's minus 30. You're gonna feel like it's minus 10 years because you're numb.
You don't feel the weather.
And that's how these guys, to analogize that, that's how these guys play. They don't feel the pain, so they can run around, hit their bodies. The next day, they take it. They don't feel it, so it's not real.
How big of a problem does the NHL? I mean, it seems like the NHL's got a serious problem on its hands. Do you think that they're A, going to face this problem head on? And B, what role do you think the NHLPA has to play in addressing this problem?
And I get really fed up about this because it's like Donald Fehr, and we talked about it, you know, when we were on last. Donald Fehr, you know, protected the team, the players' interest in baseball by not allowing steroid testing, or not agreeing to steroid testing, excuse me. And the argument was, well, steroids aren't illegal in baseball. Yes, but they're illegal.
They're illegal in the rest of society.
In real life.
Yeah.
So, and you know, the point was, did he do the players... a disservice was some question people had. Well, what do you want to weigh? Do you want to make these guys more money, quote-unquote, or do you want to take care of their well-being and their families by having them around for a lot longer?
Well, shouldn't it be both? I mean, is it incumbent on the players themselves to stand up en masse and say, this needs to change, the culture of hockey? Because it sounds like reading this article, it's not just a couple guys who are rogue.
No.
It sounds like it's ingrained in the culture of the game that we love so much. Doesn't the NHL, don't the players themselves have to stand up en masse and say we have to change this?
Of course. This is my take, though. It's not only is it ingrained in hockey culture or pro culture, it's ingrained in culture in general. I mean, substance abuse is a huge problem in mass culture. It's not like this is just hockey. The thing is, Drew, back to your original question, it is a huge problem. We're talking about hockey specifically here. It is a huge problem. This article shows you that pill popping, substance abuse, mm-hmm. whatever you want to call it, is a huge problem. But as everyone knows, it's a very complex problem. The thing is, when you give a guy help and he gets better, it doesn't end there. If you're an alcoholic, you're an alcoholic. If you're a drug addict, you're a drug addict. If you're addicted to OxyContin for 5 years, you're always going to be addicted to it in a way, meaning that you're always going to be if you have an addictive personality, mm-hmm. there's more of a chance that you're going to use it again. And as far as I'm concerned, it's an amazingly hard problem, but how can you? It's almost like you have to look at these things on an individual by individual basis, and you know, as a systematic problem.
What I find interesting in this article, the guys they're quoted, with the exception of Ian Laperriere, who still has intentions to play hockey, but let's be honest, his career is probably done. He's sitting out this year because of concussion.
Yeah.
So nobody, a shot to the head, wasn't it? Literally a puck to the head.
Yeah, he took a puck. Exactly.
No. He's not coming back.
No, he's 37 years old. He's not coming back. I agree with you. But he has designs to come back.
They're all former players, of course.
They're all former players. But not all of them are the bitter, depressed type. Riley Cote, is he from Winnipeg or Manitoba?
Winnipeg.
Yeah. Formerly with the Philadelphia Flyers, mm-hmm. was their enforcer,
yep.
Now an assistant coach with the Philadelphia Phantoms.
Retired at like 30. He's around your age, Drew.
Yeah, 27.
Pardon me, 28. Adirondack?
27 or 28.
Oh, okay, sorry. Here's what he wrote on his Facebook page this week. Someone needs to step in and speak up about these very preventable deaths. This is absolutely crazy. These painkillers are mass-produced, way overprescribed, and are flooding the black market with pharmaceutically made, very highly addictive drugs. This is a growing epidemic all across North America.
True. You go to the doc. I go to my doctor, and on the door at the doctor says you can't get OxyContin at this walk-in clinic.
Yeah.
It's not available because people are fiending for it.
That's right, because they're addicted to
it. Not only are people fiending, people are now robbing pharmacies. Well, it's not just
absolutely.
The new thing. People are robbing pharmacies just for the OxyContin.
That's why you go to Safeway. There's a big sign on the door at Safeway. We do not carry OxyContin.
I saw Greg Zahn interviewed this week, and Greg Zahn talked about doing steroids. He was in the Mitchell Report. I mean, let's, for all intents and purposes.
For people who don't know, he's a former Jays catcher who now works for Sportsnet.
Right, and then he he was on the Mitchell Report, so he allegedly did steroids, okay?
Yeah.
So he's a commentator now, and he talked about how, the question he was asked was, do you feel like you rob people of jobs that we're doing it the clean way? And he responded, I thought this was quite chilling. He said, the people who didn't do steroids, he looked at them as people who didn't want it bad enough. If that's his perception, and that's the way people are looking at things, you need to protect the players from themselves. Because if the guy painkillers or Percocet is able to throw his body around and block more shots than the guy who isn't, then the guy who's doing it the right way, who isn't taking it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the other guy didn't want to be addicted. Obviously, he's addicted. And he decided, it's not in his control anymore, quote unquote. But the guy who didn't get addicted to it, you shouldn't give the guy who's addicted to it an advantage. Protect the players from themselves. It's the same as steroids in baseball. If the guys who are doing steroids are taking away jobs from the guys who aren't doing steroids, John O'Fear, what are you doing? You have to protect the players from themselves. Exactly. And if you don't do that and you don't put in, regulations and testing for these things, and you're not checking with every team and checking with every player, then to me, as a players association, you're not doing your job. Take your millions, throw them out. Because at the end of the day, it's the players' well-being that matter most, not money.
Well, we were sitting around Thursday watching the NFL opener. And, of course, the NFL available here all year round on Sports Radio 1290.
Oh, Drew, your company man.
That's exactly.
It was
good
game.
Right there. Great game. But weren't you and I sitting around talking about it? The NFL has allegedly covered up something.
What am
like,
I, a mirage?
You were there, too. The NFL has covered up something like 400 or was it 4?
It hurt 400 over the past couple of years.
400 positive steroid tests in the last couple of years. If you don't think that the NFL players, it's just sort of now coming to the forefront about the impact that hockey has on somebody's long-term health. NFL is way worse.
You got to be out of your mind
if it's way worse. If you don't think all those guys are on every known steroid, probably that the test can't be found for right now.
Human growth hormone.
Because the steroids and the drugs always outpace the tests. Human growth hormones, steroids, painkillers, everything. There's a reason why they're so amped up when they get on the field to start the game. It's because they're half crazy. They're half crazy with all the drugs that are cycling through their body.
I put it this way in terms of comparing hockey to football. In hockey, you can play the game and not be involved in the physical element of the game. You really can't. You can avoid physical contact if you want.
Yeah.
There are certain players who play the game who completely, Craig Gianni, the guy who turned away from any hit. He had the ability to do that. Aside from running out of bounds in football, every football play ends up in a tackle or a hit.
Well, it was always joked about Eric Dickerson, Hall of Fame running back. He was always joked about there was never a sideline that he couldn't find, that he didn't love. Well, of course. Why wouldn't you want to get hit?
Look at him now compared to the other red running back. Earl Campbell can't walk.
Deion Sanders, they say, never wanted to make a tackle. Well, why would you want to make a tackle? If you're good enough where you can avoid
He wanted to make an interception. That's what his game was.
Well, but he never wanted to get involved in a physical game. And it's the same in hockey. I mean, it's the same concept. I mean, why would you want to put your body and really your life on the line? You're shortening your lifespan is what you're doing. And you're making your millions, and you're well compensated for it. But, you read through these articles, and you read the stories over this past summer, and you read everything else, and you cannot tell me that a professional athlete in hockey and football is not shortening their lives by playing those games at a high level.
It could be, and I think it's incumbent, as I said before, on the Players Association, whether it be DeMora Smith, whether it be Don O'Fear, whether it be, was it Baseball Now, Michael Wiener, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
And whether it be Billy Hunter and the NBA, those four have to take it upon themselves to better regulate the players themselves. They always pitted Players Association against owners. My dad always used to say the concussion issue and the respect issue between players wasn't a league players issue.
No.
It was a players issue.
Of course.
And he's right.
Of course, the players themselves have to respect
Richie, one another, or this is where we end up.
Exactly
this past year, we've been on sports. Next year will be our second year. This entire year, I would say the concussions were probably the biggest issue in hockey, and they have been for a very long time.
Not concussions, Ezzy. And I made this commitment to you the other day, Richie. Not concussions. This year, when I speak about concussions on this program, I'm not saying the word concussions. I'm saying the words brain damage.
Oh, okay.
Because that's what it is. It is brain damage.
And they talked about Sidney Crosby's brain and the point he had to get back to. Did you see that part about Sidney Crosby's brain and the functioning and what he has to get back to be able to play? That's chilling.
Your brain is being altered by these hits. That's all you need to know.
Right,
when you're altering your brain by these hits, you got to stand up and say, whoa.
Don't worry. The NHL will put, Colin Campbell will give a 3-game suspension. Oh, I think it's enough. Colin, 3-game suspension, 4-game, or no game. Remember, David Booth, who hasn't been the same since the hit from Mike Richards, Matt Cook's hit on Mark Savard. You know what Matt Cook got?
Nothing.
Six games or
nothing.
Something?
Nothing.
Oh, he literally got nothing. Yeah.
Did Mike Richards get he didn't get anything either.
Yeah.
And, don't worry. It's not within the rules. It's a head injury. It's an elbow to the head. And the league, the players have to do something about it. The league has to do something about it. And right now, nobody's doing anything about it.
They're passing the buck back
and
forth.
And you have your best player in the world. Go on this rant again. The best player in the world. The man who's taking the mantle from Gretzky and Lemieux, because there really wasn't anybody from Gretzky and Lemieux to Crosby. Thornton wasn't the guy. Lindros never became the guy. It's Ovechkin and Crosby. The best player in the world, because Crosby is better than Ovechkin, is sitting there. He may not play this year, and you don't give more than 3 or 4 games for concussion injuries.
Brain damage. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on Sports Radio 1290. When we come back, Jamie McLennan of TSN.
Welcome back. Your dreams were your ticket out. Welcome back to that same old.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Shortly after 10 in the morning here, we're.
That's a great tune.
Weren't you around for Welcome Back, Cotter, when it debuted?
Drew. You're older than I am.
I know that.
And not just a number in mentality.
According to Ezzy, Drew's actually older than his dad.
But yeah, no, Drew's older than Sheldon. Drew's dad.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks. Very, very clever, you guys.
That's your new defense against age jokes.
Very clever. You're younger than I am.
So I went to bed at 9 o'clock. Now I'm 50 like you?
I'm concerned about you going to bed at 9 o'clock, but that's for a separate time.
I didn't go to
bed
at 9 o'clock.
We're trying to get Jamie McLennan on the line. Remus is working hard, as he usually does. You can follow us on Twitter, @IllegalCurve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And, of course, the website is www.IllegalCurve.com for all your latest Jets news and news from around the NHL throughout the hockey world.
You know, Drew, Richie just pulled it up. Jamie McLennan actually did play in Russia, so we're going to have to ask him about that.
Well, let's go to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Jamie McLennan from TSN, welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. How are you this morning?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Doing very well. Thanks, Jamie. Jamie, we spent the bulk of the first hour sort of talking about the tragic summer that it's been in the NHL. What we really want to start off with you is you played in Russia for about a 5 or 6 week period. Can you sort of share some of your insights into, the travel in Russia and playing in the KHL and how you sort of found that entire experience?
Well, I mean, yeah, obviously, the tragedy that happened is just, it's been such an awful thing for the world of hockey. And when it comes down to it, you look at things that have happened this summer, and you guys touched on them. But my time in Russia, I enjoyed the culture. I enjoyed a lot of things. It's such a culture shock when you're so used to North America, and for myself, I'd played the National Hockey League for many years, so you get spoiled with the charters, you get spoiled with the Ritz-Carltons and the nice hotels and the five-star accommodation. And one of the things that when I went to Russia, it's in the hockey terms anyways, it's well known that the KHL is pretty much the best league outside the National Hockey League. So from North America, I wanted to go, and obviously they paid very well. So for me, I wanted to end my career playing one more season and have some fun doing it. And I went to Russia, and certainly the culture shock, you talk about the travel. Obviously, I said this before, when you travel anywhere outside of North America, there's just different protocols in place. And whether you go to Japan or Thailand or something, everything about the culture is different. So it is a culture shock that way. But I did notice that the air travel was a lot looser. There were some gray areas. Certainly the planes were older. And I got to be honest, there were a couple hairy flights that we were on that were a little bit scary. And like I say, you get spoiled to the protocol and the stringent restrictions in place over here in North America, and you go somewhere else, and it's a little bit of a culture shock for sure.
Jamie, if you, you talked about some of the flights just being hairy. You mentioned that Dave King said the same thing about some flights. He was worried if they get off the ground or not. If an NHL player, now comes over to you and asks, what was your experience like, and would you go play there? Is that something that you talk about at length, the travel and the worry about something like that?
Well, I mean, when I was going to Russia, I reached out to a few players that had played there. One player was Freddie Brathwaite, former goaltender of the Calgary Flames, and I reached out to Freddie and just talked about different issues. When you're going to a different country and you don't speak a lick of the English, a lick of their language, and it's not like you're just flying, to London and there's still a lot of things that you're used to or recognizable things. Like, you're going to a different continent, you're going to a country that you really can't identify with. And so there were a lot of things that I talked to Freddie about. Travel was one of them. Certainly the way that they handle their teams, and that they try to be like a National Hockey League team because they do have tremendous funding, but their outlook is a lot different. And what's ironic is I actually was with the team that Dave King coached. Right. It was called Magnitogorsk, right. And that's where Malkin's from. That's where Kuliman in Toronto is from. And there's some amazing players, some very talented people in the league. And I loved a lot of things about it, but the travel was one of the scary things. And it certainly was a warned thing before you went over there, is things are different. It's just, if I had to attribute it to anything, you call it the Wild West. It's anything goes over there. Let's just say that.
Do you think, one last question on this topic, then we'll switch over to other hockey issues, Jamie. Do you think that moving forward now, North American players will be far more hesitant to go play in the KHL?
Yes and no, and I'll tell you why. Obviously, the initial shock of what's happened is it's going to shy people away from playing there, because if they've got an opportunity to play in a neighboring league, Switzerland or Sweden or one of these leagues that are really coming to the forefront, and they pay all right, I think that guys will naturally migrate there. But in light of saying that, I'm sure that now flights are going to be under the microscope because of this air disaster and this terrible tragedy. So it's almost like if something happens, you would think that they would take more care of what's going to happen moving forward and try and make things safer. So it would be almost a catch-22 that you know that it's going to be the flights are going to be under scrutiny, and they're going to make sure that everything is safe. So moving forward, that's what you would hope. Anyways, but my belief is I think it's almost 50-50. People will shy away, but they also will believe that the Russian government and everyone involved will try and make those flights safer moving forward.
You're tuned to Sports Radio 1290. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and we're joined by Jamie McLennan of TSN.
Jamie, you mentioned Fred Brathwaite, a former Flames goalie. You yourself was a former Flames goalie as well as employee, so I think it'd be apt to ask you this question. The Flames, this team moving forward, they obviously had a nice second half to the season last year. It seemed to be in line with Daryl Sutter's departure, whether or not that was the actual reason or not. Do you think this team needs to tear it down before building it back up to a contender, or do you think this team can kind of rebuild on the fly?
I think that right now with what they've done in their off-season moves and Jerome McGinley and Mika Kiprasov both being 34 years old, mm-hmm. They've got to make themselves a contender as they go along. And I believe that that's what they're trying to do is plug holes. They've got Rennie Bork. They've got Curtis Glencross on long-term deals. They signed Alex Tanguay. You've got Mark Giordano and Jay Bouwmeester. Like, the core of this organization and team is on long-term deals, and that's who they're going to sink or swim with. So they're plugging holes. Michael Backlund is a year older and wiser. They're expecting big things out of him, and they should. He's a very good young player. They've broken the system down as far as in the system, the players, and they're trying to rebuild from drafting and from acquiring younger players in trades. And I think they have to do it on the fly because of where Jerome McGinley and Mika Kiprasov are in their career and some of the core players. They aren't going to be 24-year-old guys who win the Cup. They're going to be 34, 35, 36 if they have an opportunity to.
Jamie, you started your career in Long Island. You were actually drafted by the Islanders in 1991. Do you think hockey is still viable on Long Island? And what needs to be done to save the franchise? Because obviously they've had tons of problems in the last few years.
Yeah, I have such a soft spot for the New York Islanders because it's, you know, they drafted me and it was just, I mean, they were a dynasty in the 80s. And there's legendary people around there and Bobby Nystrom and Clark Gillies and a lot of these legendary players, Mike Bossy, come to mind because the Islanders had created this winning atmosphere. And when I got there, my coach was Al Arbor and Mr. Bill Torrey was the GM and they had this aura about them. And what's happened is obviously I attribute their organization to their arena. They're broken down and it needs some repair. And it's unfortunate because it is, and I 100% believe that the New York Islanders should stay in Long Island. They can support a team. I believe that steps forward, they've been trying to get a new rink. They're trying to rebuild. They have some good young players, but it just seems to me that every year they're sellers. You know, by Christmas they're out of it. They've got key players, the DiPietro guys on long-term deals that haven't been healthy. And then you've got a guy like Tavares who's coming along and he's gotten better in his first couple years. And they do have some depth, but it's a long ways away from being successful there in Long Island. And it's unfortunate because you look at where that organization was in the last, let's say, 15 years, and it's been a hard fall, and you hope that they can make it back up to the elite of the National Hockey League.
We're joined by Jamie McLennan of TSN. Jamie, one of the other sort of news stories that came out in the past week, there was a long article in the Globe and Mail that spoke about the what they described as an epidemic of painkiller abuse in dressing rooms throughout the NHL. In your experience, you know, in dressing rooms, can you speak to that? Do you think that are they overstating the problem, or is there a serious concern that the league needs to address, both the league and the NHLPA, in regards to painkillers in the NHL?
Well, it's, you know what, for myself personally, to speak to that, it's like anything. I was speaking with somebody yesterday who had gone through a hip surgery and said, you know what, the prescribed medication to get through the pain of the hip surgery was Percocet, and you know you're supposed to take a prescription until the end just to make sure. And I think that painkillers are in everyone's life that has to go through any type of pain. You know, I go back to if my mom was injured and you know hurt her foot, she would obviously the doctor would prescribe a painkiller for her because in everyday life, it does happen. And obviously, because you're in a physical sport and there are bumps and bruises and significant injuries that you have to fight through to play every night, there is a presence of it. But I did not witness any type of abuse on a regular basis. If you knew a guy was playing with a broken hand, I'm sure that he would have a painkiller to make sure that he could get through the game, but I didn't witness excessive abuse of it. If that's you know, if to answer your question.
Jamie, we're about a week and a half away from the start of most teams' training camps. Last year, you were, you know, assistant coach with the Calgary Flames. You worked, obviously, yeah, you were there for 2 years, and obviously worked with Mika Kiprasov, who was a breakout goaltender back in 2004 with the Calgary Flames. Who do you think is going to be a breakout goaltender in the NHL this season?
Well, you know, it's interesting, and I'm excited to see what's going to happen in Boston, because Tim Thomas obviously had a career year for any type of goaltender, winning all three awards. And, you know, can he achieve that type of elite status back-to-back? If he can't, and I don't know if you want to say breakout, because we already know that Tuukka Rask is capable of being a starter in the National Hockey League, because the year before when Tim Thomas was injured and gone through some inconsistency, Rask was outstanding. I believe he's a guy who Boston is obviously just biding their time with, and they've got a great 1-1A in net there. We all saw what Pekka Rinne was capable of in the playoffs, and sometimes when you play in Nashville and cities south of the border, you don't get as much exposure, obviously, as you know, as the teams in Canada. So Pekka Rinne is another elite top 10 goaltender that I think that is going to be on everyone's radar now. And, I mean, I love Carey Price. I think Carey Price, I don't want to say quietly, because we all know how much media coverage the Montreal Canadiens received, but Carey Price played 72 games last year and was outstanding for the Montreal Canadiens. And they've gone and made their team better up front. And they've got Georges coming back and Markov. Like, they've got some injured players that are coming back. So Montreal's going to be better on paper, which is going to translate to even a better season for Carey Price if he continues with his development. So there's some really good young goaltenders in the National Hockey League, and I'm really excited moving forward into the season to see who's going to, you know, push themselves into the elite.
Jamie, when you played in Calgary, you played behind Robin Regier, one of the best stay-at-home defensemen, I think, of, you know, for the past probably 5, 6, 7 years. He's been traded to Buffalo now. How big of an effect do you think he'll have on the Sabres and their chances of, you know, making a run at the Cup?
I just had this conversation before I came on the radio with Mike Brophy from the Hockey News. I was saying, people out east do not know how good Robin Regier is, and he's going to be a huge impact on the Buffalo Sabres and on the Eastern Division, on the Eastern Conference, because, like you said, he is an elite shutdown defenseman. And Buffalo has made, they've plugged holes, they've gone and made themselves a better team by just, obviously, their owner has opened the purse strings and allowed Darcy Regier to spend some money, but he's spent it wisely in plugging the holes to make sure that Buffalo is going to be able to contend against the Pittsburgh, against Washington, against Boston, because their depth is really strong.
Right.
Robin Regier is going to, he's going to be in that number one pairing. He's going to be a shutdown defenseman. He's going to go against everyone's top players, and he's going to make them physically pay, because that's what he does. He wears on people. He's going to give you 24 solid defensive minutes every night, and he brings that physical element and meanness that there's a lot of players that are going to shy away from going down the left side, and I think we're going to see Buffalo right in that Eastern elite because of guys like Regier. He's going to help make the rest of that team braver. He's going to help Tyler Myers take that next step to be an elite defenseman, because he's going to teach him the little intangibles that it takes to play every night 82 games. So I think he's going to be a huge impact for the Buffalo Sabres.
Jamie, we have one last question for you. It's a two-part question, but it's a very important question. Last night you tweeted that you were at the movie Contagion. So I have two questions for you about that. How would you rate that movie? And when you sneezed in the movie theater, did anyone get anything from you, whether it's a cold or a flu?
I'll tell you, what's funny is, I mean, there's a film festival going on here, and I go to. Honestly, 4 movies a week, because I love movie popcorn. So I go and I'll eat movie popcorn, and if I like the movie, I stay. If not, I take off. And so I go to the movie yesterday. I'm a big Matt Damon fan, and the movie theater is packed. And it's You know, it's a great, you know, like it's a great atmosphere. I'm sitting in the back and I go by myself, which is kind of creepy, but I'm in the back and no joke, I sneezed right in. It was like in a quiet spot and they're, you know, where they're talking about contagious stuff and the whole theater started laughing because I think they thought that it was part of the movie or something. And I like kind of was like, excuse me. So, you know, everyone knew it was me that sneezed you know, I just, as far as it, like, I liked the movie. It was all right. Anything Matt Damon, I can handle. So, yeah. You know, when it comes down to it, I think it was good.
How was the popcorn?
Popcorn was outstanding.
Well, that's
there's a theater that I go to just for the popcorn. I couldn't care less about the movie. So I actually watched a Bollywood movie the other day just because of the popcorn.
Jamie McLennan of TSN, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
No problem. I'll talk to you guys soon.
Take care, Jamie. Thanks very much. Let's head to commercial break. When we come back, we'll talk about the interview, and we're going to talk about Kyle Wellwood signing with the Winnipeg Jets. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290.
Jim, can you record the podcast? Mm-hmm. Record that, Jim.
Hey, we dance. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 10:25 in the morning. We just heard from Jamie McLennan of TSN. Really, yeah, it was a great interview.
You say party, Drew says sandwich.
What?
There's a band called You Say Party, We Say Die.
I know that.
Drew says sandwich.
So I said, you say party, Drew says sandwich.
I got nothing.
Come on, Richie's losing it over here.
Well, it just came out of nowhere.
If Reem found it funny, then I know I've got a keeper there. Sometimes Reem's like, not Reem that funny. Like, yeah, thumbs up for Reem.
Reem just likes to play the straight man.
It didn't make any sense, but it was funny.
Right, but nothing I ever say makes sense.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense.
It's fairly true. Let's talk about Kyle Wellwood. He signed with the Winnipeg Jets.
Speaking of sandwich,
great signing. I want to quickly get in here. I told Richie this last night. I was reading the article by a friend of ours. Ben Wendorf wrote about it, and we didn't have a chance to write about it, but I think this is a good signing. It's 1 year, $700,000. I like the signing. Me and Richie were talking about this. Kyle Wellwood, he's not going to be the second-line center.
Dear God, I hope not.
He'll factor in as probably the third-line center, maybe even fourth line, splitting that with Ben Maxwell, who, you know, we posted a couple articles on our site, illegalcurve.com, where we basically you know, posted depth charts and who's factoring in on which line. Richie, the reason why I like this signing, Wellwood's, he's got limited skating abilities. He's got limited defensive abilities. But what I like is that he brings offense to a third line. He's a little bit more better offensively than Maxwell, who doesn't have a lot of NHL experience. And I know you'll like this and agree with this. He's a better face-off guy than almost anybody we have right now.
Yeah, Jim Slater's good in this circle. He's a good face-off guy. That helps.
Yep.
I think the signing is being blown out of proportion quite significantly.
I would agree with that because it's Kyle Wellwood.
All right, let me give a quick breakdown of Kyle Wellwood. I'm sure people know about what he brings to the table, but I'll give you a quick rundown. He's not a great skater, as you just mentioned. He's not a physical player. He is not great defensively. He is a tremendous stick handler.
Mm-hmm.
He has tremendous hands. He has good hockey vision. He's a good passer. He has a pretty poor shot. He uses a very short stick, and if you play hockey...
Yeah, he does.
And if you use a short stick improves your puck handling ability, but at the same time, it takes away from your shooting ability. He is a limited player in that regard. He can create offense. He can stick handle in the corners and all that stuff, but he's not physical. He is... he's basically a fourth-line player, and I think people need to take into consideration one thing right now. This is a guy who you signed a week before training camp who couldn't get a job anywhere else because I think he was holding out for the Sharks. He basically couldn't get a job anywhere else, and you signed him for $700,000, so it's a cheap contract for 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have many other options. I'm not so sure Winnipeg was his first option, although there's much opportunity here.
Yeah.
Let's not go crazy about he could play second line. He might play third line. You know,
well, I think hold on, Richie. I think third line is
he could play.
That's fair.
That's a test. That's an indictment of the Jets' depth more than is his talent level. And
right.
I think people need to realize something is that what he brings to the table. Sure, he brings. You know, let's talk about his role in regards to the power play. Oh, okay, he's pretty good on the power play. his, you know, his skill set is more effective, especially that skill set, you know, kind of like Alexei Kovalev, although Alexei Kovalev has a better shot and is a better player. He's not a very fast player, and he can, in a controlled environment in the offensive zone, he can be an asset. The question is this. Who does he take? Who drops off the power play if he's on it? So your first line is Ladd, Wheeler, and Little.
Yeah, maybe even Kane.
Yeah, well, yeah. So just for that line last year played well. Yeah. So none of those guys are coming off the power play. You got Byfuglien and Enstrom who aren't going to come off the power play on the points, okay?
And if Bogosian's there, he's on the second line.
You want to get Bogosian more time with the power play. Right, maybe Hainsey.
Yeah.
Maybe Oduya.
Maybe Jones.
No, Jones isn't going near the power play.
I like Jones on the power play.
Jones doesn't even make the top six.
If he's in the top six, he's on the power play. Hainsey, no Jones. Maybe Stewart.
Stewart's on the power play either.
Go on, Richie.
They're on the power play. I'm not watching any games.
Go on. Don't worry. You don't have any tickets. You're not watching anything.
Anyhow. So the second line is arguably whether it be Burmistrov or whether, you know, and then Kane. Kane's a must. So Burmistrov, you know, sure you want him to shelter his time a little more, but you want to get him some power play time, get experience there. And then you have Antropov. Are you paying Antropov $4 million a year?
Not to be in the second power play.
Yes, so if that's the case, who is he taking off the unit? And if he's taking somebody off the unit, how does that work with, you know, with the team, blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
Then you talk about the third line. Okay, maybe he plays on the third line. And then that's the argument of, does he protect, are you sheltering the younger players' minutes to be able to put them in better situations to improve their confidence and play them against worse players? Or, alternatively, do you throw the young players to the wolves and let them just play as they can and see how they fare? Because
What would you say?
I personally... Like, I wouldn't mind a scoring player to be able to take some pressure off a guy who can play bigger minutes. You know, like I mentioned Upshaw. They couldn't sign him, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. But, and he signed for way too much money. But a player like that who's proven to be a pretty effective scorer and he could have him for a few years, Wellwood, if he's here for 1 year, I'd just as well play Ben Maxwell, a guy who has some offensive talent. Let him play the third line center role. See what you got there. And Wellwood's not going to sign long term. He's not a long term solution. So, I would rather let the young guys, you know, take their hits and see what happens. And you always have him there. But I wouldn't play him at the expense of a younger guy. If he's on a long-term deal, maybe, and you have him moving forward, but he's just on a one-year deal. Who knows what's going to happen? He's restricted in his ability moving forward because of the talent level that he has, and you know what he can do. That's why I don't mind the signing. He adds depth. They need depth. But I would.
The timing was a little bit weird, and it takes away from someone else's position spot.
Well, it doesn't necessarily. Here's my point. Everything that this team has done in terms of their depth forwards this year indicates that they're going to give their playing time to the guys who work the hardest in the games, work the hardest in practice, everything else. Because a lot of their bottom six players are fairly interchangeable in terms of talent level. If he doesn't work hard, he's just not going to get on the ice. Right. And for $700,000, who cares?
I like the signing overall. Yeah. I'm just saying, don't give him too much responsibility.
He might play some time in the AHL. That's the thing.
I think it's a one-way deal, though.
It's a one-way deal.
You have to clear waivers.
But he'll clear waivers. I mean,
he might not, depending on injuries on other teams.
Kyle Wellwood, I think his best season was with Toronto, and he's had conditioning issues, and he's bounced around from team to team. He's had problems. And he is limited, but I think, blown it a little bit out of proportion, but...
It is.
I think that...
Slow news day.
There's a spot for him to fit in. And I think I posted an article on the Legal Curve, and I kind of had my ideas, Richie, for the third line. And it is interchangeable, and you are going to have possibly Jason Gregoire, Patrice Cormier, Ben Maxwell, Carl Klingberg, Spencer Mrazek, if he makes the team.
The hardest working guys are going to get the playing time. Do you buy
Tanner Glass might be on the third line, Drew.
Yeah, on the conference call yesterday,
I don't mind
on the conference call yesterday, he spoke about that he's going to bring some veteran leadership to the team.
Yeah.
I don't.
Do you buy that?
Well, he's played in the playoffs with good teams, so maybe, but I don't
on this team, Richie's an old guy on this team.
I don't have a problem with this. It was only 28. I don't have a problem with the signing. I think it's a fine signing. My question is, where does he fit in the long-term picture? Whose power play time does he take? And
I don't think he'll necessarily will take. If he doesn't perform, he won't take anybody's.
I'm just saying, even if he does, you know, what's the long-term benefit of it all?
It's 1 year. What's the downside to it?
And can he play tough minutes? The truth is, can he play the tough minutes that that you don't want the younger players to play because of the pressure? Because if he can't play those minutes, which I don't think he can, then where does he fit in? I don't mind the signing. You bring him in. It's $700,000. There's not a lot of downside. I'm just saying, for the people who are really optimistic about the signing, take it easy. Take it easy. Okay? It's Kyle Wellwood. Take it easy.
Take it so easy. Let's go to commercial break. How about that? Maybe when we come back, we'll play. I think there's a song called Take It Easy, right?
That's by the Eagles.
There you go. We'll come back with that. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290.